This holiday season, please consider supporting the Cato Institute and specifically the Cato Daily Podcast. Visit cato.org/podcast sponsor to get started. If you support Cato with a donation of $1,000 or more, I'll gladly give you a shout out on the podcast, or you can designate another individual to receive that benefit and all the other benefits of being a Cato sponsor. That website again is cato.org/podcast sponsor. And thank you for your generosity. This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Sunday, December 15th, 2019. I'm Caleb Brown. The Elizabeth Warren plan for antitrust enforcement involves breaking up some big tech companies. Perhaps not surprisingly, her plan looks a lot like European litigation over Microsoft bundling software not that long ago. Firms with more than some threshold of revenue would be deemed, in a sense, utilities. The rationale for such a vigorous enforcement of antitrust is still unclear. Cato's Walter Olson comments.
Senator Warren is proposing a major expansion of antitrust, and it would make it more European-looking. It would make it much more obtrusive and invasive as far as the kinds of business transactions that it looked at. Currently, there is a lot of government scrutiny of mergers, acquisitions, ways in which businesses buy other businesses. But for decades now, antitrust law, in what was a bipartisan consensus, has been mostly focused on the question of, is this practice harmful to consumers? And the older question, which was much talked about in the populist age where we got so much of the earlier history of antitrust, is what about competitors? You know, what about stuff that they think is hurtful? And so the first thing that Elizabeth Warren's plan would bring back is lots and lots of government activism on behalf of competitors who feel injured. If you cut your prices too low, much more likely that the government would order you to raise them under her punitive predatory pricing ideas. Likewise, businesses that feel that they are being cut out of access to so-called critical assets or essential assets in some industry, like a network of some sort, or perhaps a shared resource, or even perhaps a physical plant of some sort, they think they're not competing well enough because they don't have access to. The government could start ordering businesses to give access to their competitors to allegedly level the playing field. Now, we know from the history of antitrust law that competitors are a much better organized group than consumers. Consumers are very diffuse, aren't paying very much attention to antitrust law. And competitors, on the other hand, often have a great deal of money at stake. They hire sharp lawyers and lobbyists in Washington, and they use antitrust law as a way of winning certain competitive battles that they had been losing in the marketplace itself. They will file lots of complaints in order to hobble the leading companies in a particular industry or category. Win or lose, they've still often hobbled them. And so there has been, I think quite rightly, a great hesitance to reopen the old days of antitrust, in which it was a battle to refight market battles that had been lost and bring in the government to bring down a competitor, whether that meant break it up, put it under constraints about what new businesses it might enter, all of those sorts of things that were typical of antitrust law through the 1960s or so until the new consensus came in the 70s and 80s.
So she would proposes to designate firms that have $25 billion or more in revenue as so-called platform utilities. What does that mean?
I wish I knew exactly what it meant, because utilities is supposed to have a historic meaning of things like gas utilities and water utilities, in which there are literal hookups and there are sometimes elements of eminent domain. On the other hand, if Coca-Cola or McDonald's is a utility, and I think those companies are probably big enough, what's left of the meaning? You know, is there a right to a Coke hookup like a water hookup? I'd hope that she's not going to press it that far. And yet, every time a useful old word like utility is seized on and turned into a floater, which is then applied to businesses that were quite unlike it. We are facing more rambunctious government, and this size threshold, and Warren, in a way that we've not heard candidates in a long time, really does treat size as the problem in itself. She is completely unafraid of using thresholds to say, above this level, you face lots more regulation just because you're big, not because you've done anything worse, perhaps because you've done things that people like and want to buy, but because you are big, you're going to have to submit to much more detailed government direction.
So, in general, it seems like this is, as you sort of alluded to, a relitigation of a lot of complaints that people had against Microsoft in the 90s, specifically with respect to the fact that they had so many services operating together. Amazon has lots of services that function better together. If you buy their Prime membership, you get a catalog of television shows that you can stream. They have their own digital e-reader and, you know, other discounts that go along with that. In terms of benefits to consumers, you know, what are the benefits that she sees or that other people saw with breaking up Microsoft's bundling of software that makes all this worth it?
Well, it can be hard to identify benefits to consumers of breaking up or hobbling these companies, because the ones you mentioned are mostly in the most dynamic part of the economy, in which new free services are constantly being introduced, and taking a leading firm like Microsoft, and we can, in retrospect, kind of count some of the damage that was done by not breaking them up, but making them so legally risk-averse that they did not enter a lot of fields they might have. A couple of general observations, which is, first, there are four or five of these enormous firms that, if you read some of the coverage, you know, they can make no mistakes and never plant their foot wrong. But in fact, all of them have launched businesses that have fallen flat on their face. You know, Google's attempt to do social networking with Google Plus, and you can reel off ones that have failed from Amazon and Apple and various others too. And so they are not bound to dominate every new service that they enter. Meanwhile, what is the benefit exactly of separating Instagram from Facebook or separating YouTube from Google? Articulating why that would benefit consumers is something I've never heard them do successfully among the biggest bad people.
Is who else has come out with plans relating specifically to big tech? I know that, you know, Elizabeth Warren characterizes herself as a capitalist and has done so on many occasions, but she also sees the government as a fairly powerful tool for driving markets toward ends that she prefers. What have other candidates said?
Many of the Democratic candidates at least mention it on the campaign trail and indicate that, in general, they are for more activist treatment. Andrew Yang, who is often seen as being the most pro-tech candidate, has actually proposed some different kinds of regulation. It's not clear to me that he's the most pro-tech candidate in practice because of that. But the few of them, although obviously Bernie Sanders makes detestation of big business his overall theme, but no one has quite made bigness as such their theme the way that Warren has. And part of it is that Sanders clearly dislikes more features of business than just when they're big or when they are dominant. Sanders also dislikes businesses that are number eight in their area and are not very big. he's just anti-business. And Warren's view seems to be somewhat more complicated, but it, and she would say that she's proposing to bring us back to Teddy Roosevelt and others who were definitely not socialists. But the this debate does not take place in a vacuum. Economists have some disagreements on this, but the reason the old antitrust went out of fashion is that it really wasn't showing that it was good for consumers. Getting back to the predatory pricing issue, when you give the government a broad mandate to keep people from selling products below the cost of production, are you catching any fiendish campaigns to drive a competitor out of business? Maybe here and there, but what you're mostly doing is just discouraging a type of business behavior that often has good reason behind it, and of course benefits consumers when it happens. Everyone knew that the old doctrine had some trouble wrapping around modern types of network economics in which products are given away free. You can still analyze those markets as being advertising sales markets or for whatever way in which they do make their revenue. And it still makes sense to treat the advertisers, for example, as the consumers who are or are not being helped. But the idea that the old antitrust was a success in making protection of competitors its major theme, I just don't think that's true historically. It was a failure. It didn't work very well. And scaling back antitrust helped the American economy tremendously and is one of the reasons why, as almost everyone has to admit, it has been America, not Europe, that has been best at generating tremendously successful companies in the new economy.
Walter Olson is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. Please consider becoming a Cato podcast sponsor. Visit cato.org/podcast sponsor to make a gift today. And thank you.